Welcome to the PMPA's Speaking of Precision podcast, featuring your hosts, Carly Kistler-Miller, David Wynn, and Miles Free.
Hi, I'm Miles Free, and welcome to PMPA's Speaking of Precision podcast. Carly Kistler-Miller and David Wynn have joined me today, and we are going to take a deep dive into delegation. Welcome, Carly. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Miles.
Thank you, Miles.
Deep dive delegation. I'm liking the alliteration there, sir.
Well, thank you. The thinking behind this is what makes a great leader a great leader? What makes a top leader a top leader?
Oh, okay.
What are the attributes that make leaders? And I don't think that people give delegation the importance as a leadership attribute. So why don't we go around and look at some of the things that we think make leaders leaders.
All right. Well, I imagine knowledge, right? They got to know what they're talking about and why they're there.
And the converse, just to be contrarian, and yeah. They better know what they don't know.
Well, you know, that's a strength. To say, you know what, I don't know, I'm going to find out from somebody who does instead of pretending, and then you end up nowhere.
And that's courage. That's character and courage to have the ability to say, you know, I don't know.
That's the real superpower, to not know but have the confidence and the ability to find out.
Exactly.
There you go. I think anticipation is really the one dimension that separates leaders from managers. You think of a traffic cop. Traffic cop manages traffic.
Yeah.
But they don't lead. If you anticipate, a leader anticipates, you don't need a traffic cop. The traffic just goes. You make a circle. You have blinky lights.
Oh, so you're saying like anticipating what's to come, the problems,
right.
The challenges.
That's leading,
okay.
Not coping. So to me, managing and coping are the same kind of,
right.
You know, idea. Leading is actually, you know, clearing a path, creating a path for your team to succeed.
Well, it's like offense versus defense, right? You're on offense. You're not playing defense, trying to handle all the problems.
I'd like to thank you for not saying I was offensive.
Oh, give it time. It's early in the podcast. But no, that makes total sense. So we got anticipation, knowledge. You got one there, Dave?
Humility.
Ooh.
I think understanding when to take credit and when not to. And I think this is where leaders can really shine, because you own the losses and you give the team credit for the victories.
Right. Yeah, because if your team is succeeding, then it's a reflection on you as a leader.
That's right. You don't need to take credit, because you get all the credit you need when your team succeeds.
There you go. Bask in the reflected glow of their success.
So jumping on that, his coattails on that would be gratitude.
Yeah, thank your team.
Yeah, and recognizing them. I recognize your hard work. I recognize what this took. I recognize what you did. Thank you.
And that builds in the team. They feel appreciated.
And valued.
Mm-hmm. And so now everybody's operating at a higher, you know, more satisfactory emotional state. So I think we've covered quite a few. Now I think it's time to talk about delegation.
And you're not talking about passing the buck.
I'm not talking about passing the buck.
Because I think there are leaders out there who think, oh, I don't want to deal with this, even though it's their job.
Right. Yeah, that's
delegation is a scary topic as a leader. You have to trust people and allow them to do things.
Oh, no, say it isn't so.
Yeah. So it's interesting, when I started to think about this podcast, I thought, well, what are the excuses that I've heard from managers when they're doing something that they should have delegated?
Okay.
When they you know, I'd much rather do this clerical task than, and I did it myself. I had a layoff list to do, at a former employer. Or I could answer a technical question on the listserv. Guess what? I'm answering the listserv question. Still got to get that layoff list done. So here are seven excuses that I've encountered when managers fail to delegate and so by default no longer lead. So the first one is, I like to do this. I'm good at it. It's what I do. So what would you tell this leader? I do this. I like to do this. I'm good at it. What should we tell that leader?
Well, I guess it's who's going to do it when you're gone if they don't get it started now.
That's a good one.
That's right. I mean, who is the successor? How will they cope if you're absent, if you're unavailable?
You know, really, the leader should only be doing what only the leader can do and not trying to convince themselves that these other tasks are that, but they should only do what they can do. And most of the time, that's leading. It's not anything else.
That's right.
To lead, that's a full-time job.
Yeah. That's an expensive coffee maker if they're making coffee.
Sometimes
when you've got that leadership position, the reason you have it is because you have the authority to make the hard decisions.
Right.
And it's easy to say, oh, you know, I'd rather do this menial task than deal with that hard decision.
Yeah.
I'm getting something done.
Right. I'm busy, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not advancing.
I'm busy, but I'm not exactly accomplishing what my role is set out to do.
Yeah. I think you just hit on something else there, too. That's the leader's job, is to make the hard decisions. The rest of the decisions should be delegated to the team. It's only the hard decisions, the mission critical decisions, the ones that are organizational do or die, that the leader makes. Everybody else makes all the rest of the decisions.
That's interesting you would approach it that way, David. I remember at a former position where we had processes, and the job of the leader was when to tell us it was okay to violate the process. In other words, you know, when the policy doesn't work, the policy should handle the 80%.
Yeah.
The leader's there to handle the 20%.
I go back to the David Marquette book, which was a speaker at Management Update many years ago, the Turn Your Ship Around. Yeah, the only decision he would make on his ship was nuclear decision. That's it. He made the chiefs make every other decision on his boat, which was a submarine, but he would only make the nuclear call.
There you go.
Highest and best use.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
mm-hmm.
gold standard. So, David, have you ever heard anybody say, you know, it's going to take too long to train. It's going to take too long to explain. I'll just do it myself.
Oh, man.
Ever heard that?
Have I ever heard that?
Have you ever said that?
I have. Yes.
Yeah, I think we all are.
I could do the task in 5 minutes. Why would it take 3 weeks to train somebody? You know, that's the...
Right. So what's our response to that?
It's an investment in your employee. I mean, you've got to invest that time to train them. Now you're teaching them to fish instead of handing them the fish. And I know I'll give an example right here in PMPA when I did the layout for the 6 pages. I love doing layout and graphic design. It's just a great big puzzle. And I had to hand that over to Duran because that's what he got hired to do. And there's other things that I need to be doing, not that. So, yeah, it took me a while to train him on it. But now he does it on his own, and I'm able to do other things. But sometimes it's hard to give that stuff up, too.
It is.
You can make the selfish argument to a leader, too, that, you know, yeah, it's going to take 5 minutes for you to do it now, but how many times does this task come up? And how many other five-minute tasks do you do because it takes too long to train somebody? Now, all of a sudden, you may have one or two or three more full-time people, and then you have more time to lead.
You know, that's an interesting way of looking at it, David. So we think about training as adding capability, but to our organizations, when we invest in that training, we're actually creating more resilience in our organization because now there are more, you know, instead of being stiff, only one can do it or it fails, now there are other options. So our organization is more resilient. We no longer have that single performer, that leader that who's doing what they want to, as a single point of failure. Now there are more ways to get the job done.
And it kind of goes back to an argument that one of my great uncles used to make, and that was that it's like running a job on a Davenport versus a Brown and Sharp. Can the Davenport keep up with four Brown and Sharps? Can it keep up with five? Can it keep up with six? And when you spin that around to the leader, yeah, the leader may can do this task twice as fast as anyone else. But when you've got 10 times the task to do, the leader can't possibly keep up. And so you have to bring more people in to do it. And then hopefully eventually you can get them to the level the leader is and they're doing it just as fast as they can. But you've got to really, in order to have that capacity, you've got to have more people.
Good point.
Yep. More people, more capability. So
what's the third one? Or are we on the fourth one?
No, we're on the third one.
Okay.
They don't like to do this. I'll just handle it.
Oh. Oh, man.
Yeah, I think they're just lying to themselves.
Miles, did you have a camera on my shop?
I hacked your Wi-Fi.
Some of these things sound real familiar.
Well, they do, and that's because we're on a process of growing and becoming more leader. You know, hopefully we're becoming more leader. So they don't want to do it. They don't like to do it. I'll just handle it. Are they really saving anybody any grief?
Well, here's my thing. And maybe this isn't the answer you're looking for, but we're earning a paycheck, right?
Right.
People are earning paychecks. If it were fun, we'd probably come do it for free. There's always going to be parts of our jobs that we don't like to do. And if you have to delegate it to somebody and they don't like to do it, well, that's just going to be that part of their job they don't like to do. But there's going to be a lot of other parts of their jobs that they like to do.
So when I got my MBA, we had a guy in ethics. Mm-hmm. And he used to quote Thomas Aquinas. And he would say, you're stealing the truth. And you're stealing the value of their job by doing their work.
Oh.
So, listeners, Thomas Aquinas for 2024, don't steal the truth. Don't steal the value that they create. Don't steal their self-worth by doing their work.
It could also just be that they're lying to themselves, that that person would be fine and the leader just wants to do it anyway.
Yeah. Miles's way is much more eloquent, but there's a lot of chicken barns around here.
I know. So I was
not
like
yours.
The Cracker Jack version of that.
Around here, there was a lot of chicken barns. And if you run chickens, then you got to deal with the poop. And there's chicken poop parts of every job. And you don't want to deal with it, but that's just part of it. And so doesn't matter what the job is, you're going to have that to deal with. And that's what we always said. Sometimes you got to pass a little chicken poop on to somebody. Only we didn't quite say it that nice.
Well, I can't wait till we get to number four with that introduction.
What's number four?
I'm the only one that knows how or can do this chicken poop stuff. So seriously, I'm the only one that knows how. I'm the only one that can do this. And I would suggest, David, and I would suggest to you, Carly, because mm-hmm. you've both been entrepreneurial and had your own business, mm-hmm. that this is the number one failure of entrepreneurial leadership. They keep that one little secret, that one little thing that only they can do. I gave you some grief. You're not authorized to use the
chomper.
Right? The chomper, right? But I've seen this. My wife, other people in my family have worked for entrepreneurs, and they'll let everybody do the support work. But that one magic thing, whether it's a process camera or developing the sheet film or whatever it is, there's one thing they keep to themselves. And I don't think it's about job security. I think it's about pride. But in reality, if you don't have other people who can do it when you're out with a customer, where's your resilience?
Well, I was going to say, when you first said I'm the only one that knows how, my first thought was, well, let's go back to the training. If you're the only one that knows how, then that means you haven't trained somebody and you need to train somebody. And now you're the single point of failure
right.
in your own company, team, department, whatever. Yeah. You are setting up that entire group to fail.
Yeah, I mean, talk about high risk.
Yeah.
I think this becomes the where the leader doesn't even know what it is that they do. They haven't taken the time to sit down and analyze the task and put it out there. It's just something they've done for so long. And then if any of you have ever done anything that's complex and it takes a lot of skill, then go sit and try to write that out into a standard procedure. That becomes a very long process. Because you don't even know a lot of the stuff that you do. Like, oh, I didn't realize I reached up and hit this button or twisted the wrench this way.
It doesn't have to be that complicated a thing, David. Foreman training at U.S. Steel, we had to write a safe job procedure for assembling a banker's box.
Oh. That's interesting.
That was an all-day sucker for a couple of people.
Actually, there's a great video online. It's a dad who challenged his kids to write the steps to make a peanut butter sandwich.
We should put that in the show notes. That is a great video.
It is great as to how
they do it explicitly.
How detailed. Yeah. How you need to explain actual step by step. That's funny. All right, what's our fifth one?
Well, that goes naturally into, well, they'll just screw it up. You did it just like I said. Oh, my.
I'm definitely guilty of that. They won't do it right. I'll just do it myself.
Oh,
but,
man.
Yeah, that's not good leadership. Not,
it's not
good leadership. No, you have to trust your people. And it goes back to the training thing again. If they're going to screw it up, that means you didn't train them right.
You didn't. Or you didn't give them the right tools.
Exactly. They need to have the resources to be able to do the task.
Yep. We've got two more left. I can do it better, faster.
So what?
I can do it better. I can do it faster.
Yeah, but so that's what? Not highest and best use.
That's right.
Yeah.
I agree.
I had an old-time screw machine man tell me that when they start out, they're only going to be able to do it about 30% of the speed you can. And then you can consider them well-trained when they can do it about 60 to 70% of the speed you can.
That's the voice of experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Voice of experience. And last one. Nobody else is available. Nobody else can do it.
Oh, well. That is just a big old excuse.
Yeah, I mean,
because
if
you don't, you either need to hire somebody or you haven't hired well.
Or you haven't trained, again.
And
that's the failing of leadership.
Yeah. I think this comes in from leaders who get in a pinch and they bring people on board in a hurry and they bring on the wrong people and they have bad experiences. And it's because they didn't take the time to analyze their hiring process and make sure they're bringing people in that are cultural fits.
That's a good point. And there's going to be spots where that excuse is valid. You're in the middle of July. Half your people are on vacation. Maybe you have to step up. But as a regular, it is not a valid excuse.
I agree. So we've covered, I think, the main what of leadership. So now let's talk about why. So why is it that leaders or managers allow these seven things to derail their delegation process? What is?
I have a theory, but I want to know what your why is.
Well, my theory will be in the show notes too.
Seriously, you really need to make this a visual medium.
Yes.
You keep holding things up to the camera.
It's
please listen to the images I show you.
Here it is, folks. Here it is, folks. This is my number one prop from MBA teaching. This is the cover of Wired magazine from, I can't even read it, back in 2014, I think. It's a picture of a baby with text the size of my hand that says fear on it. And fear is the reason why we choose these seven bad behaviors instead of to do the right thing with delegation. So what fear could be driving our manager, leader, performer to lapse into not delegating? What are they afraid of?
That someone else is going to do it better than them and take their position?
Outperformance. Performance anxiety. Okay, there we go.
That leads into insecurity. They're insecure about their ability to do the task and might be worried that somebody could do it better. Some owners are worried that people will come in and do the task better, and they will, and run off and start their own business.
There you go. So don't share the secret and don't be outshined.
And then there's go ahead.
No,
I was going to say control.
Yeah,
like control, it's the control freak.
Yeah, just,
the micromanager.
It's mine, I'm in control.
Our brains are like just out of phase, just like half a step.
It's terrifying, actually, the way we can communicate sometimes.
Yeah.
You guys have telepathic powers.
Yeah, well, you're part of the club. You'll be in there soon.
So to me, fear is the real reason why whenever there's a performance failure by our performers, by our people, fear is probably, you know, they didn't want to make a mistake. They were afraid if they made a mistake, bad things would happen. You know, I'm insecure, I'll be outperformed, and it's all, what do you like to say, black and white thinking?
Yes.
Catastrophism, right?
Yeah.
And in reality, it's just a task.
Right.
Let them get it done.
And let them fail. Let them fail at it because they'll learn.
That's right. That could be part of the training.
Because I guarantee you, as the owner or the leader or whoever you are, you've failed 1,000 times getting there, and you forget. Now, you've got insight and all these things that you've learned that you can give that person, and maybe they only fail 100 times where you failed 1,000, but you're going to fail when you're learning.
And by helping them eliminate their fear, then they get better, and you then become the ultimate leader, which is growing your team so that everybody can be delegated to and delegate, and everybody operates at their highest skill level, and nobody's operating at their lowest skill level because they didn't have the opportunity to succeed.
This is a great topic, Miles. I never thought of it, but delegation, that is one of the hardest parts of leadership.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Well, and as we're going through it, I'm thinking back, especially when I was younger, didn't really understand that leadership, to be a strong and respected leader is to trust your employees, is to train them, is to give them all of your knowledge, because now you've built this team that can help you reach your goal.
So we omitted trust in our initial list of attributes.
Oh.
So let's revisit that on another podcast sometime.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's do it.
Very good. That wraps up today's podcast, our deep dive into delegation. Thank you for joining us.
For additional information, please visit pmpa.org, where you can find our knowledge centers filled with articles, webinars, more podcasts, and other resources for precision machining.
Yes. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss one. Plus, check out our Speaking of Suppliers podcast, where we talk to PMPA technical members and learn how they can help our shops.
And if you aren't already taking advantage of a PMPA membership, be sure to check out PMPA.org and learn how we can help you thrive. And why is a PMPA membership important, Miles and Dave?
Because we are better together.
Don't forget to join us next Monday on Speaking of Precision.